Introducing DBM, the premium AV distributor, bringing the highest quality video and audio to your clients. Here at DBM, we pride ourselves on providing customizable bespoke packages and invite you to join us through the entire process, ensuring a truly personalized experience. Our highly trained, experienced team members will ensure a seamless installation with support always at hand. Your journey to elevated AV integration starts today with DBM.
Hello everybody and welcome to The Integrated Home, the podcast that's produced by the Home Integration Community for the Home Integration Community. My name is Jeff Hayward and we're here at the CEDIA Tech and Business Summit in Edinburgh in front of a live audience to find out how the industry is evolving and where the business opportunities are for integrators and brands. Welcome to The Integrated Home. Now I'm joined by two industry stalwarts from north of the border, Stuart Lillis from Limitless Automation and David Coutts from Highland Smart Homes. Stuart, introduce yourself for the benefit of the audience and for our listeners.
Well, I think I know a lot of the people in the room, but my name's Stuart, I'm from Limitless Automation. We're a home automation company with a real passion for cinema, listening rooms, entertainment spaces, and everything connected to the automation process.
Very good, and David?
Good, yeah, same. Similar to Stuart, my name's David Coutts from Highland Smart Homes. We're a smart home company based up in Inverness. We're one of the only integrators that far north of the border, so we take a massive amount of pride in technology and bringing a lot of technology to the islands. Same principles as Stuart, we're massively into our cinema, audio, lighting control and other technologies. We also have a home technology showroom in Inverness.
Gorgeous. And what about you, Stuart? Do you have a showroom here in Edinburgh?
I've got a collaboration space, which we just opened the tail end of last year with a company called Audiophilia. So we've got a little cinema space where we also show some elements of lighting control and we'll be adding to that again this year.
Nice. Now, how would you describe business for you so far in 2024?
It's been good. It's been really good. So I know it's been a tough space for the last few months. There's been a few things. I think the momentum of a lot of hard work over the last 5 or 6 years means the word of mouth is kind of trundling away. And the recession tends to have a bit of a delay in hitting in Edinburgh, which is quite nice. So we can always lean in that when these things happen.
Okay, and what about you, David?
A slightly different view on things. Things have been a slightly trickier this year for us. And coming out the back of COVID, buying patterns we noticed had changed in people. People are a lot more comfortable buying things online. HR has been a bit of a sticky wicket for us over the last, so many months.
Finding people or just keeping them?
Finding people, keeping them, entertaining them, motivating them. People are slightly different. The mentality of people is different. The way people want to work, the way people are able to work. Training opportunities are maybe slightly thinner or fewer and far between. Just a different mentality of staff at the moment. So that's one of the hurdles we're dealing with right now. So.
And what about business sectors? Are you exclusively residential or do you dabble in other areas?
No, so we actually have two companies. We've got iSight Systems and Highland Smart Homes, so we actually have a security company as well. The security industry is always good. It's quite buoyant when things are tough. It's also quite buoyant when things are good. Highland Smart Homes deals mainly in the residential sector, but we've noticed a bit of an upturn in commercial audio and commercial lighting. So that's something we've been playing with quite a bit more recently. The hospitality sector is picking up a little bit now that's coming into the summertime. Where we're from is quite big with regards to tourism. So that tends to bring a bit of an influx in the hospitality sector for us.
So that's bars, cafes, hotels?
Bars, pubs, clubs, cafes, outdoor entertaining spaces, catered venues, these sorts of things. So these people are starting to really, really focus more on their entertainment opportunities. And obviously just the evolution of technologies, meaning that people are wanting Wi-Fi in certain places. They want to be able to entertain in the most wonderful of places. So that means bringing technology to places where it wasn't in the past.
Okay, well, let's bring the conversation back to inside the home first. Now, Stuart, we've had a conversation recently about this being the golden age of cinema and media rooms. Is that true?
I consider it the first golden age of home cinema for me. So I've been doing this over 25 years now, and I think we've got some very, very good installers in this room, and I think everybody would be lying if at some stage in their career they said they hadn't put 5 speakers in the ceiling and called it home cinema. You just wouldn't get away with that these days. The technology's never been easier. The information's there. A big part of it is the streaming services that were never really there before. I was gonna say the Apple TV for me is the bargain of the AV world. For £170, you can get something with a gorgeous interface, integrates with lots of different things, and you can get practically every streaming service on there, and high-res audio where we all have, if you're in Edinburgh today, it's not uncommon to have gigabit connections, so that bottleneck is no longer there. As an industry, I think we've moved faster in the last 5 years than we have in the last 10. And a lot of that's based down to kind of social media. I don't think you can really hide, you know, and it's it won't be long if you're on a forum that you post a job where you've got terrible speaker locations and somebody pops up and says, that's maybe not quite right, you can do that better. I'd like to think we're a collaborative space now. It's a nice industry to be in. There's not people throwing stones at each other anymore, and I've collaborated with other people in this room on projects, and it's worked out really well. So I think this is the golden age of cinema. Behind that, Cydia have just recently released RP22. That's huge. Having that information at hand, and I think I wasn't going to go deep into RP22, but I think RP22 is a little bit misunderstood within our industry. It's not just a tool for us. There's a lot of incredible information out there, but it makes it super easy for M&E consultants and general contractors to understand tiers of cinemas and what we should be doing to adhere to that. And M&E consultants love that stuff. If we can come in and say, why is that room costing $85,000 when I've had this quote for $30,000? And we can say, well, these are all the different tiers and this is the minimum performance specification it should reach. And we didn't have anything like that. We didn't have these tools at our disposal 5 years ago. And the other side of it is the massive uptake since COVID. People weren't spending. It's been a huge passion for me all throughout my career. But for 80% of my career, home cinemas have been in a decline.
Yeah.
And then since COVID, people have been investing in the entertainment spaces within their homes. The content is available, the equipment is available, and products that I know we're both fans of, like cinema build systems, where I think the best analogy is it's like the Lego for the cinema build space, you know. So we can quickly go in and transform a space, treat it acoustically, make it look awesome, and just deliver experiences.
Same for you, David?
Yeah, massively the same. Like I mentioned, people's buying patterns have changed. What tends to happen after the COVID period is housing prices just erupted. People had to figure out better ways to make most use out of their homes. So you're starting to see the evolution and growth of garden dens, outbuildings, pods. People are starting to utilize the third and fourth bedrooms at home because they're trying to space themselves out in a house that was overcrowded. So what you're also finding is people tended to actually have a little bit extra income. They had money sitting in the bank and they couldn't really get out to spend it. So they were looking into these corners, looking into these spaces. Well, what can we do with them? Well, why don't we turn them into a multimedia space or dedicate home cinema rooms? So same perspective for us, being in the Highlands and slightly further north, land is ever so slightly cheaper up there and it's quite vast. People are trying to utilize the spaces outside. I think we'll touch on that at some point as well. I think it's a really, really nice market, but also slightly newer market. You saw the whole containers into products, and now you're starting to look at real outbuildings with outdoor entertaining spaces, things like that. And I think it's a really, really good direction.
And do you think that consumers are now accepting that the cinema room is a thing, that it's not this kind of special space that only a few people have? Actually, we can all have it now.
I think it is. I think with the evolution of products such as Sonos and other things, people have dabbled in the feeling of cinema. And they've had a taste of it. And I think what that's created is a little bit of an urge to move forward into something slightly more professional, or to go the whole hog and go with a full dedicated cinema room installed by a custom integrator. So yeah, I think it is. I think that these things have opened up people's eyes into what is home cinema, what's the difference between a media room and a home cinema room. We're still getting asked for a home cinema room installed in somebody's kitchen. It's strange. So things like RP22 and also the social media marketing coming from integrators is excellent, because it is educating more and more people. It's giving them the right terminology, which makes it easier for us as a sales enterprise, is they can come to us knowing what they want in advance. We can then obviously introduce them to the technologies that are available. And then, like Shir mentioned there with Cinema Build and a few other of the sort of Lego style room build systems, you can come up with such amazing creative designs that cater to everyone.
I thought it was interesting what you said about RP22, because historically the industry, probably when it first started, was seen as a bit of a smoke and mirrors kind of industry. Actually adding a bit of science, a bit of process to it, actually maybe it's a sign of the industry growing up.
Oh, 100%. No, I think we've been overdue needing something RP22 for a long time, and the engineering has been kind of left out a little bit. We are an industry of engineers and we should be setting minimum standards, and that's kind of what RP22 does. Again, it's like looking at all the bad practices that used to happen, even just little simple things. Not every speaker is designed to be a home cinema speaker, you know. So when you come in and people are using non-LCR speakers as your left and right, things just don't sound right. Unfortunately, it's you're trying to use a truck as a car, and it's just never going to work, you know.
It's also allowing for elements of accountability, because what it's doing is it's setting a standard practice for everybody to adhere to. So you're not going to get away, as Stuart said there, the people posting their pictures, their case studies of cinema rooms and other likewise, but there is an accountability factor there, then you are going to have to adhere to these standards. And when you come to pricing jobs, you have some backup, you have paperwork, you have scientific facts there to prove this system is factually better than that system for whatever reason, and hence why it's in a different pricing bracket.
And these entertainment spaces, would you say that consumers are coming to you saying, I just want this one room, or are they saying, I want a whole house and I want a cinema room to be part of it?
I would have said previously the second option, where they want the whole house and then the other package. We're starting to see a bit of a change in that. The main control system platforms that everyone loves and knows, I don't see such a demand for them as much anymore, because there's a lot of ancillary products coming out that can cater to a lot of these needs. Individual cinema room and the whole room package, they're phenomenal now. Some of the technologies that have come out in the last year or so have been excellent, and they are allowing you to have this dedicated technology room within your home without having to interfere with the rest of the property, which again opens up budget brackets for people. So you're starting to find that you've got a large audience of client, which you wouldn't have had before, because it's been stereotyped to be quite a rich man's toy.
What about you, Stuart? Would you agree with that?
I would say there's definitely been a movement towards the one-room entertainment spaces. I've been asked to price up projects from architects, whereas we're not interested in whole home automation, but we do want the one. And that's been relatively recent. That's only been the last couple of years I've seen that as a... I think people know that they can do that. We can do the whole home, but for this client, this is what they want. And having the reference spaces, and David kind of touched on a little bit there, the control systems that will operate that one-room entertainment spaces wasn't really a thing before. We've seen massive players pull out of that game altogether, and they're starting to come back now. We see like Control 4 do very good one-room solutions. Crestron, there's HDA are working on something, the little Ava remote everyone's seen. That's predominantly designed as a one-room solution, and that's coming flooding back, and I think that's a reaction to the market. They wouldn't have done that if these one-room entertainment spaces were not becoming a huge part of our business.
Okay, so what about outside the home, outdoor systems? I bet you do loads up in the Highlands, don't you? All those midges, I bet they...
We do, you do.
Is there an automation system to kill midges? Because I would invest in that.
I mean, Inverness is not going to be famous for sitting outside, really. Let's give it that. Although it's got some of the most beautiful views in the world. My favourite experience at home with regards to my own technology is sitting out in the garden with a dram, a bit of music on the background. And if I like it, naturally my clients are going to like that. And this is also with a lot that's getting posted online. People have glamorized now the outdoor kitchen. They've glamorized these outdoor pergola areas. There's a lot of good influencers online now who are posting very well on TikTok and Instagram on how to build these oak beam pergolas, and the best way to complement them is with a great set of speakers and some nice lighting. So I think that the evolution of that, again, it comes down to the pods, it comes down to utilizing the space you already own rather than going out there and trying to buy or build something new. You already have this phenomenal garden, it's just being underused.
Do you find you're getting a reaction from social media being such a big part of what we do? I know like Amanda Wellman, a big fan of the show, they do incredible outside spaces, and being such a small world now, people kind of see it, and like you say, TikTok, Instagram, all these kind of things.
Same idea, I'm building my own outdoor kitchen at the moment, and the first thing I'm thinking about is, where's my speakers going? Where's the lighting going? Where's the pizza oven? And why are we building it? We're building it to spend time with our family outside. So yes, the view might be pretty and the weather might be nice on occasion. But it's about creating these memories with your family as well. So I think a lot of people are taking a little bit more time to investigate every corner of the property they already own, and that may come down to then also utilising the outdoor spaces.
What about outdoor spaces in the city? Is there any room for that?
Do you know, it's something that I don't get a lot of call for, and I don't know if I just don't push it. I try to stay as close to central Scotland as I can, just as far as being able to offer an experience and service that I can. That's kind of the best way I can manage it at this time. Edinburgh and kind of Glasgow, two big cities, outdoor spaces are premium. And we get three days of summer a year. So don't get a huge amount of call for it. But then it might be I'm just not doing a particularly great job in letting clients know that that's something that we do.
Well, one thing that I know is big, I mean, the CEDIA analysis last year talked about it being a huge growth market, was lighting control and blind control. I bet you're doing a lot of that up here, aren't you?
It's always been a huge part of my business. And it's like the streaming services for home cinema that have made that kind of side things easier for us. It was only really 10 years ago we were flood removing halogen lights and things from our houses and putting LEDs in. And now we're kind of 10 years in going, well, maybe there's some things that weren't quite right with that technology, and we're starting to understand circadian rhythm and properly automating these things. And it's not just for the health benefits of the people within the home. There's... I had one recently where it was a client that loves cars. They've got three kind of quite exclusive cars in the garage, and the shading was just to protect the vehicles, the solar gain. So, but again, it was to spend a lot of time away from home as well. So just automating it so that we know the worst parts of the day where we're going to have solar gain in that particular part of the house. So the blinds are automated to drop either side of this open garage.
I think we're the same. I think clients with access to Pinterest and a lot of other things that they would never have normally looked at, clients are paying a lot more attention to layering their lighting. So at home, instead of having a bank of nine switches or whatever you've got in every kitchen, because these open spaces that are being created at home now, they're really, really screaming for automated lighting. So, and being able to integrate music and things into these scenes as well, I think it's a real big deal. You know, in the kitchen, wet hands, not having to touch your phone, touch whatever's. I think clients now seeing the benefits of layering the lighting, they're focusing a little bit more on the design of the lighting as well, which is really, really nice to see, which makes the sort of discussion around scene lighting, mood lighting, a lot easier.
And is that something, lighting design, that you would offer as well, or would you partner with a lighting designer, or would you think, you know what, maybe I should retrain as a lighting designer to take advantage of that?
We do both, to be honest. And I'm glad you said layers, because it's one of the biggest three principles that you should be adding to any lighting specification. But we'll often arrive where we're the technology guys, so we're the everything, you know. And it's just
you're
one of those. It's like,
yeah.
But on larger projects, we know where to stop and start. It's the same as you're kind of talking about the commercial applications, where I'd like to think we kind of do some incredible networking and lighting systems and things like that, and we'll definitely get involved with the planning stages of these projects, but we know where to cut off, we know where we cannot support. And it's exactly the same with the lighting design specification, and there's no shame in outsourcing that either. I consider a big part of the success of my business and starting and trying to stay lean is know what generates revenue for your business, and don't be scared to bring people in, and it's not a dirty word. There's a great analogy earlier on in the chat with Leslie, where she was talking about you don't fail your own accounts. It's like it's too important, and you don't want to make a mistake. So there's a lot of the design element. I've always outsourced all my AutoCAD designs because I know I can provide a better product to my client, continue to generate revenue for myself, and ultimately offer a better product at the end of it. You know, so it's the same as if you have an electrician and they want a network. You're not going to be insulted if they bring their network guy in that day. You know, so it's. I don't know why it's different for what we do.
Now, David, I know you're a bit more of a control freak perhaps than Stuart, so...
I'm actually probably more standoffish than he would be, because 9 times out of 10, the client's got a slight idea of what they'd like. We'd get some half-made drawings from an architect where they put 6,000 downloaders in the living room, and we've kind of got to work from there. We've seen enough projects where we can learn from what we've seen. So we can give guidance, we can give advice on what's likely to work and how it's going to work. We have our own showroom, like we said, where we can demonstrate quite a lot of the technologies. But I don't think we should be detracting from the quality and ability of a good lighting designer. I think it's really important. Our business is quite diverse in different ways, and I think that we've thinned out enough of our staff that we work in such a diverse nature that we'd like to continue to be experts in our fields. If we start diversifying far enough out into, for example, lighting design and whatnot, I think we start to come out of our comfort zone a little bit there, and we'd rather keep it specialist. So I think outsourcing to the right people at the right timing, and then making sure it provides the right value, everybody at the end is going to win from that, I think.
Okay. Now, you talked about working in hospitality, bars, cafes. I mean, I hate the word resi-mercial. It's talked about quite a bit, but is that something that you see in Edinburgh, Stuart?
I like residential. I just like dealing with families and people and getting to know what people love and being able to deliver things, you know, and I quite like the kind of personal touch. But I do get involved in commercial. Often it's a residential client where they'll kind of say, look, we've had a nightmare in our business where you answer the phone, nobody else does. Can you come out and sort this out for us? So, and that's where it's kind of, it's quite difficult sometimes, but it's okay to say no. But as long as you come back to the client and say, look, I can, and I can help you at the design stage, and I can sanity proof things for you. But I need to know as my business what I can support and what I can't support. So it's important to me. Again, it's like we do these incredible networks for people's homes, but if there's a mission critical server that goes off at 4 a.m, I'm not going to have someone answering the phone for you that will do that, whereas I have a very, very good B2B network integrator that will do that. Similar kind of a lot of the security side, we get asked for security an awful lot. We are not SSAIB certified and have no intention to be, but we do have integrators that we work with, so the client gets the best of both worlds. And if they want us to install those products and then this other integrator comes on and takes all the monitoring support off of us, I'm absolutely fine with that. As long as the client is floating on air after it and they get the solution they want, we don't have to install every element of it. We just make it talk.
Okay, so where next, David? What are the market trends are you seeing? Where do you think it's going to go?
To be honest, coming today has been quite a big deal for me. Having listened to Leslie earlier on, she's opened my eyes up to a few different things commercially that I need to pay a lot of attention to in my own business at the moment. We're having HR issues at the moment, and I think a lot of people are for whatever reasons, and it's something that we need to take a step back and look back inside to the business. I think right now people need to, and Stuart mentioned being lean, running his business lean. He's filtering out all the expenses and he's trying to bring things back to basics, which is, well, let's be honest, when we were back to basics, that's when we all made the most amount of money probably, is when we didn't have all these mass expenditures and showrooms and very expensive staff, which is quite a new thing. So I think, you know, looking back into the goldfish bowl is going to be quite an important thing to do. So I'm going to go back and maybe optimize my labor staff and see if I can figure some stuff out there.
Don't be ashamed to outsource. Like, it's not a dirty word. It's as long as you're managing it properly. And again, that's where kind of a lot of the software implement. I know you're a big fan of the business management software that you use. We can see in real time what's working, what's not working, and that's where subcontracting and outsourcing is not the answer for everyone. Mm. But you shouldn't be ashamed of it, and you shouldn't. I'm completely open with my clients what I do in house and what I don't do in house, and never had any negative feedback on that.
I think that's one of the key challenges as technology integrators. You're meant to be experts in all parts of technology, and some of the.
But then that's what I think. I really don't like the word expert in what we do. I think what we do is so massive now. There's no such thing as an expert in every single piece of technology in your home. It's just not possible.
Yeah, I would see you more of as a composer, a facilitator, a consultant. That. I think you're sort of the person that kind of knows down every avenue. And I think it's quite important that you've got somebody central that could take on the responsibility to bring in these outsourced projects. You're going to want, as a client, to have an expert in every field. There's no one person that's an expert in every field. So
an expert in every field, and just making sure the technology that's in your home is designed to talk to each other.
Yeah.
That's the one for me. And it's a big part of what we see all the time is people find backdoors to make something work. And my theory on that is if it's a backdoor, someone's going to close it. And that should not be a mission critical part of the system, you know, and that's making sure you're working with manufacturers that are on the same page and open protocols, you know, it's huge.
Clients are taking a huge comfort sort of there as well. At times you're getting a massive comfort and you bring in your own teams. So the fact that you've got a security company you work with regularly, they know that communication between you two is going to be seamless. Same with you bringing a lighting engineer, you bring in your own security team, you're bringing on your gate guy, you're bringing in a network guy, you're doing the lighting, whatever it is yourself. I think client takes quite a comfort knowing that the team you're bringing in is a team that you know and you know well, and they can rest assured that the communication between you all is going to be quite fluent. Because 9 times out of 10 when a project breaks down, it tends to be communication between all the different parties and timescales. So I think when all that's quite optimized, and like I said, I see myself quite a lot of the time as a facilitator, a consultant, somebody that's just in the middle, organizing things that technically have nothing to do with me, but I'm still in there because we tend to be in the center of the project a lot of times, especially at the end stages.
Yeah. And what other business processes have you looked at and improved, do you think, Stuart?
A big part of the tail end of last year was kind of, I'd been using different business software suites and managing all those was difficult. Well, probably just highlights exactly what we kind of talked about. And I kind of moved everything across to one platform for most things and just tried to make things seamless. And again, it's having enough years in the business now to look back and see kind of what's made you money, what's not made you money, and just make sure that all these products talk to each other. So that's from your bookkeeping down to the website, any leads that come through that, the CRM, stock levels, everything is all integrated now. So it should, in theory, all talk together. But then there's also holes in that scene didn't work quite well. So integrating like WeQuote that's maybe 8 months ago. But even that, they've got an open API between the business software and WeQuote. So if I send a quote out, and that answered a big part of, I know as a business, one of the issues I had was just not getting back to people quickly enough. And I knew I was losing good projects because I wasn't getting information and quotes out to people quickly. And that's answered that for me. And the fact that I took a long time deciding on WeQuote and another solution. But the fact that it ties in natively with my bookkeeping software. So when the client accepts, I can get a bill of materials of all the things that I need to order and know which supplier has it in stock. And have an invoice ready for the client so we can hit go. They've got all my terms and conditions.
That's good. Yeah.
So yeah, that took a long time. But again, I outsourced the setup of all of that as well. If I had done that in house, I would have had to shut my business down for 2 months.
And yeah. Interesting.
It's just, yeah.
Interesting. And David, what do you think you're going to do differently to make yourself more time efficient?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, optimizing the staff members that I have, making the business a lot more lean. So getting rid of the straggly ends and. Like I said, I have a showroom, which to some may look like a massive expense. To others, it's a fantastic sales tool. So really just making sure that things that we are putting in place and we are investing our money in are generating the revenue that's required from them. It's also being humble enough to know that if you've done something, you made a decision at one point, the market has changed. Things are different. Stuart touched on it there. People are buying on speed now.
We've noticed this market trend recently that people are going with the person that gets back to them first.
Not necessarily the cheapest, not necessarily more expensive, not necessarily the best quality. People are willing now to buy things twice.
So it's all part of the experience for me. And that's why I'm kind of like big on, like, you, if your van's branded, make sure the people that are turning up, they've all got, they're well presented. Do you know what, funny enough, and everybody's going to run out and buy them after this, what I get the most comments about, I've got these little work mats that are branded. They're great, and I never put my tools down on the floor. They always go there. And it's just a little thing. Muck guards, they're available on Amazon for like 30 quid. It's just a shoe cover. But the fact that you hang it with a little, it comes with a little carabiner clip, so you're never without them. So you've not got the blue shoes with the work boot that's tripping up. But almost every client, when they see them for the first time, those are incredible. I need to get some of those. So it's to the point now where I've bought them for clients, I've left them. But I always give away coffee, because I always end up talking to clients about coffee and these muck guards. So you might get a Mr. Rio on coffee and a muck guard off me if you buy a cinema.
And I think what's been really interesting is listening to you talk about social media trends and how that's affecting what's going on in your business. Are you doing social media yourselves? Are you getting other people
social
to do
social media has been huge. I tend to do it in-house. It's really hard to stay consistent with it. But then that's why, like, my social media is probably the least professional that you've ever seen, but it's live.
It's authentic.
It's authentic, but then that's what I get back from clients. Like, every now and again, certainly before I had a showroom, people would be spending tens of thousands of pounds. And I was, you only know me from social media. I only created my website last year. And I was always kind of shocked. Like, if I was buying a car, I don't know if I'd go on it just in the back of Instagram. But it's clients, because look, we see you every day. You know, you walk the walk, you talk the talk. And we've seen the level that you install to. And you can't really hide from that on Instagram. So
I think that's your accountability factor as well. You're putting everything out there. You're showing the standard of your work. You're showing the professionalism that you carry. You're also showing the ugly bits. It's real. And I think the realness and how you react to things that don't go your way is just a good show of character, as it is when things do go your way. Myself and Stuart, we've spent many years, you know, posting videos of ourselves chatting rubbish and explaining what we're doing. And 9 times out of 10, we're posting to our peers in the industry, because at the end of the day, most of our followers tend to actually be other installers. But there are nuggets out there, and people are getting to see the sort of standards of work that you carry, the way you carry yourself as a business, and they show, you know, scars and all. And I think that's a big deal. So the accountability factor is quite large there. But when you are showing projects and you are posting things online, you are posting it to eyes, lots of eyes, you know, inspecting eyes, and you're going to get your trolls, you're going to get your feedback, and feedback from me is always welcome.
Because if I talk too fast, I my work's not tidy enough, someone's going to come back to you, and at the end of the day, it's another learning opportunity for you to make your stuff better.
So what advice would you have for installers listening, people in the room? What would you say today to cope with what's going on in the market?
I think a big part is kind of don't be scared to collaborate, don't be scared to reach out. For me, I mean, the company I worked for, they went into administration with 24 hours notice, you know, so I had to kind of get up and running straight away. It was a great baptism of fire, but I was really lucky in the fact that I knew a few people that had successful businesses, and not a kind of formal mentor as such, but I was taken by a friend, and they're like, sit down there, you've got a desk in our office for the next month. This is the software that we use. I'm going to show you how to set it up. And I was up and running, you know, so, but if I was puffing out my chest, pretending I know everything, I've been doing this. I've been installing systems for 20 years. I know exactly what I'm doing. I still never set up a business. I still didn't know, you know, profit and loss account I hadn't done once in school, you know. So it's not being scared to look all these smiling faces. It's a nice space to be. Our industry in general, I mean, I know Matt and Steve will tell you, the space 10 years ago wasn't collaborative. Everybody was butting heads. It was pretty cutthroat, whereas I don't think it is anymore.
That's when I came in. I came in exactly 10 years ago expecting there to be, who's this guy think he is, just coming into this one of these action meetings. It was about 10 years ago. And I came into the room, and you were the first guy I ever met, actually, which was nice. And he's very welcoming. I was like, wow, this is a nice guy. And then the next guy, nice guy. And then I was like, well, this is just an industry full of people willing to share knowledge, because there's a big community spirit now, which I don't think there was prior. So you hear the stories of what was there, what was available. The evolution of social media has allowed you to be able to reach out and communicate with people on better levels.
As an industry, if we all up our game, do you know what I mean? Let's just create a bigger pie, you know, so we all get a piece of that. It's that was cheesy as anything.
No,
the minute it came
cheesy
out of my mouth, I was like, oh, I'll take that back. But honestly, like the if we're all improving our game, it's only good for everyone. I'm lucky enough to be sharing a space and a region with some people that I think are fantastic. And I know that if a client doesn't go with me, they're not going to have a terrible experience. And I think that's just good for the industry in general.
And do you think the market is getting bigger? I mean, you talked about the HR issues you've got, keeping people, finding people.
Yeah, I think it is. I think the market is fine. And it's that doesn't seem to be the problem. I think there are issues with just the natures of folk and the way that people are being employed recently and the changes and things. And obviously minimum wage is changing. When you've got young apprentices and you're trying to bring guys through, because where I'm from, we don't have an abundance of guys we can pick from. So we're effectively having to train everybody from scratch. So we're actually hiring on character and ability to learn rather than somebody full of qualifications.
Brilliant. Well, look, thanks, guys. Thank you. Give them a round of applause. Thank you, Stuart and David, for sharing your insights with us today. And thanks to Cedia for hosting us at the Tech and Business Summit and providing very good refreshments. Thank you. You can find out more about the Integrated Home on Instagram at Integrated Home Podcast and on LinkedIn at the Integrated Home Podcast. The Integrated Home is brought to you with the support of Distributed by Meridian. We support Together for Cinema and we are a Wildwood Plus production.
The Integrated Home supports Together for Cinema. Together for Cinema is an AV industry movement that designs and installs cinema rooms in children's hospices across the UK. So far, thanks to the huge generosity of manufacturers, distributors and integrators freely giving of their time, products and expertise, we've created 21 dedicated cinemas. In these special places, children, their families, staff and volunteers are now enjoying fantastic movie experiences together. We want to build more rooms in more hospices for more children. To do that, we need your help. Visit togetherforcinema.co.uk and find out how you can be involved to help make short lives that little bit better.